Glad to have you with us today in our second service here at the First Colony Church of Christ. And before I get into this morning's message called How to Move Forward from a Bad Decision, let me highlight what's coming up 2 weeks from today. 2 weeks from today is our Super Sunday, Bring a Friend Day. And this year we're so pleased to have Lee Strobel with us. Lee Strobel's best-selling Christian author. And his message for the day is called Journey from Atheist to Believer. A lot of you may be familiar with some of his books. For example, Case for Faith and Case for Christ, as he articulates the rationale behind his journey from atheist to believer. It's going to be a fantastic day, and I hope you'll be here 2 weeks from today and invite lots of folks to come and be with you. Well, today, how to move forward from a bad decision. We are in this series called Growing Past Your Past. And today, I want to urge you to do that, to put your regrets behind you, to embrace the grace of God, and to move toward a better future. Anybody here ever made a bad decision besides me? Some minor, some major. Bad decisions cannot be undone. They can be redeemed. They cannot be changed, but they can be covered by God's grace. We all have them. And virtually everybody in this room, there are times you look in the mirror, and there's something in your past, and you can't forget it. And you want to forget it. But you can't forget it. And because you can't forget it, you wonder, can God forgive it? Is it possible to move forward from a bad decision? Lance Armstrong's been in the news this week. One blogger said he went from Mr. Live Strong to Mr. Crash Hard. The International Cycling Union has stripped him of all seven of his Tour de France titles. And the man formerly associated with victory and perseverance and strength is now called simply a cheat, a liar, and a bully. Pat McQuaid, the president of the International Cycling Union, said this, "Lance Armstrong has no place in cycling, and he deserves to be forgotten." Ouch. Ouch. God does not abandon us when we have made foolish decisions. God loves and would love to welcome Lance Armstrong, you, and me. And quite honestly, sometimes some of our foolish decisions actually open the doorway for God to be at his absolute best. Surveys of Christians all around the world will tell us that believers' favorite song, old song, new song, whatever, it's Amazing Grace. Why? Because it reminds us that God's grace is greater than our sin and greater than our secrets. Well, today, as the foundation of this message, I'm going to tell you a story. I'm just going to read a small clip of a wealthy, middle-aged man who did something really dumb. And you say, well, that's not particularly news. This is news. This is not just any wealthy, respected, middle-aged man. This is King David, for crying out loud. Here's a story. I'll read four verses from the Bible. One evening, David got up from his bed, walked around on the roof of the palace, and from the roof he saw a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful. And David sent someone to find out about her. And the man said, well, isn't that Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite? David, that's somebody's daughter. That's somebody's wife. But David just pushes right through. David sent messengers to get her. She came to him. He slept with her. Then she went back home. The woman conceived, sent word to David saying, I'm pregnant. Wealthy, respected, powerful, middle-aged man has his eye on a young, beautiful woman. You say, duh, that's not news. This is King David, for crying out loud. This is the guy that stood before Goliath. This is the man who was king of Israel, not just any king of Israel. He was the best of all the kings. For 500 years, every king of Israel was judged in light of David, and they were all said to sit on David's throne. David was the one who purchased the site for the temple. David was the one who brought back the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem. Isaiah, the messianic prophet, mentions David 10 times. Jesus was born in the, quote, city of David. Peter's sermon on Pentecost mentions David. David is called in the Bible a man after God's own heart. And when you start reading the New Testament, Matthew chapter 1, verse 1, the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David. But there was a dark chapter in his life. Even though he was a great man and he loved God, he entered into an adulterous affair with Bathsheba and then afterward tried to cover his tracks and arranged to have her husband killed. Good people can make some really bad decisions. And all those decisions cannot be undone. They can be redeemed. They cannot be changed, but they can be covered by God's grace. And you say, but now wait a minute. Sometimes the consequences linger. They do, but don't confuse consequences with grace. Consequences are very, very real. The old evangelist D.L. Moody said, you can go out and do something really stupid. You can go out and get drunk, do something really dumb, break your leg. Your leg has to be amputated. God will forgive you. But you'll still have to hop around on one leg for the rest of your life. There are consequences, but just because the consequences are there doesn't mean that God's grace is not there. It's real, it's powerful, and it's strong. David's story was a sad story. God was grieved by it. And listen, David himself was grieved by it. He looked in the mirror and he said, I'd love to forget this. He cried out to God for mercy, and he found it. You can too. I don't want you to hold on to the baggage of yesterday. The scar of yesterday may tell you where you've been. It does not have to dictate where you're going. And wherever you are today, truth is your friend. And if you will face it, today, with God's help, can be the first step in a new direction. And God will make a way to the extent that we invite him in. David prayed. God's our ally. And he prayed three prayers that all of us in this room can pray today. I'm going to go ahead and give them to you. They're real simple. God, cleanse me. God, restore me. God, use me. Cleanse me. Restore me. Use me. David wrote 77 Psalms. Psalm 51 was written after the episode with Bathsheba. It tells us how he felt and what he thought, and it highlights the hero of the story, God himself. Prayer number one, cleanse me. This is what David says. Have mercy on me, O God, according to your unfailing love, according to your great compassion. Blot out my transgressions. Wash away all my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. For I know my transgressions. My sin's always before me. Notice what he does. He dives right into the pain. He feels it. He acknowledges it. And he turns to God as his only hope. Against you, you only have I sinned and done what's evil in your sight, so that you are right when you judge me. God, if you were to send me and banish me away from your presence, you would have every right to do so. I agree. Notice, David, he doesn't try to vindicate himself. He's not about damage control. He's not about trying to create a perception. You know, sometimes you'll hear people say, perception is reality. Listen carefully. No, it's not. The only folks for whom perception is reality, advertisers want you to think perception is reality. Gullible people think perception is reality. Perception is not reality. Reality is reality. David says, I'm not trying to create an image here. It's not about image management. He's not blaming Bathsheba, not saying, well, you know, bad parenting, too much sugar, lack of sleep. I'm coming clean here and acknowledging this. And God, I'm asking you not to create some image. I'm asking you to cleanse my soul. Cleanse me, verse 7, with hyssop. And I will be clean. Wash me and I'll be whiter than snow. Hyssop. What's hyssop? It's a little bushy plant. In the Old Testament, if your house was unclean, Somebody had a disease there, for example, leprosy. And it had to become ceremonial clean. You know what a priest would do? They'd dip hyssop in blood, come to your house, touch it. It's now a clean place. God, I look in the mirror and I can't forget it. Can you forgive it? And God says, what you can't forget, I will choose not to remember. And you will be whiter than snow. Yesterday I was talking to somebody not from around here, and they said, hey Ronnie, does it ever snow in Houston? I said, are you kidding me? You not heard of the blizzard of 04? Happened right here. How many of you remember the blizzard of 04, Christmas Eve? It was fabulous. And after our Christmas Eve services, we had two, you know, over here in the other place. And after the first one, walked out and the snow's coming down. It was wonderful. And then after the second service, came out and the cars were covered. And I'm telling you, we had snowfall out there that much. Solid eighth of an inch. But some of you, you've seen a blizzard. Some of you seen snowfall. I mean, snowbanks, 3, 4, 5 feet and more. I want you to imagine two roads. One of them just as smooth as this center aisle. And another road full of potholes, deep, beat up, one pothole after another, and the snowfall comes. And it covers the smooth road. And it also covers the road with one deep pothole after another. My life may have more potholes than yours. Yours may have more than mine. But they can all be made white as snow because of God's amazing grace. And wherever you are today, you're not the first one to have sinned. How do you find forgiveness? Here's what you do. You want it. You seek it. You want to set things right, and you run to God. And He does the hard part. His job is to show grace, and He will do that. And listen, and your guilt is gone. I got a phrase I want you to say. Here's the phrase. My guilt is gone. Say it with me. My guilt is gone. It's gone. When you come to Christ, it's gone. Lord, cleanse me. Your second prayer is restore me. Verse 8, let me hear joy and gladness. Let the bones that you've crushed rejoice. You ever read any Henry Cloud stuff? He's a Christian psychologist. Writes some good stuff. Really, really good stuff. A lot of you're familiar with Cloud, John Townsend, if you've ever read the book Boundaries, best-selling book. He's written a lot of stuff lately on happiness, and he says something that we all know, basically that happiness doesn't just happen. That once you get beyond having your basic needs met, you know, food, clothing, etc., happiness is the result, is the fruit of a life that has some noble habits to it. Happiness comes from some healthy habits. And David says, yes, I want to be cleansed, but Lord, I'm going to ask that you help me to be the man that you created me to be. Let me hear joy and gladness. Hide your face from my sins. Blot out all my iniquity. Notice, create in me a pure heart. David is pleading for renewal. He says, I want to be changed by you. Renew a steadfast spirit within me. No more the kind of gross instability that's been characterized of my recent life. Create a steadfast spirit within me. Restore to me the joy of your salvation. Grant me a willing spirit to sustain me. Restore me, God. Help me to be the kind of man you created me to be, a person of joy and purpose and purity and moral strength. And then use me. Cleanse me. Restore me. Use me. What you're about to read, you're about to hear David say, God, I'm not content just to be forgiven. I'm not content just to be clean. I'm not content just to be joyful in my closet. I'm going to ask not only that you heal me, but that you allow my healing to become a source of healing, a source of refreshment, a source of blessing to another. And you know what? Tons of you in this room have done that very thing. You've been cleansed, you've experienced restoration, and now your prayers being answered, God, make me useful. David says it like this: then I will teach transgressors your ways so that sinners will turn back to you. Deliver me from the guilt of bloodshed, O God, you who are God, my Savior, my tongue. I'll sing of your righteousness. No longer dull lips, no longer a dull heart. Open my lips, Lord, and my mouth will declare your praise. I don't know if you know who Mark Kyleberger is. Fascinating story. He's a younger man, only around 30. Graduate of Harvard, graduate of Oxford, a Rhodes Scholar. His family thought he'd go into business and he would have been very successful. His friends thought he'd go into business and he would have been extremely successful. He's very good at what he does. He founded a group called the A21 Campaign, the A21 Initiative. It's a group of nonprofit works. And, you know, it would have been fine to have gone into business. It's fine to do what he's doing. But somebody asked him not long ago, they said, what was the turning point for you? You went to Harvard. You went to Oxford. You were a Rhodes Scholar. You had all these open doors. Why are you doing this work? He said, I asked myself a question that unfortunately a lot of people wait till they're really old to ask. Here was the question. What kind of legacy do I want to leave? What kind of legacy do I want to leave? You know what? I'm sure that Satan was whispering in David's ear, You just need to hang up your cleats now. You need to hang up your uniform now. And don't even bother to show up for the second half. But David did not listen to that whisper. He didn't hang up his cleats. He didn't hang up his uniform. And he leaves an entirely different kind of legacy. His legacy doesn't end with Bathsheba and Uriah. They were hurt. Others were hurt. His legacy also includes the grace of God and a fantastic last chapter in his life. Well, Psalm 51 crescendos to a high point here at verses 16 and 17. He says, God, if there was a particular sacrifice I needed to bring, I'd bring it. But you don't delight in a sacrifice, or I'd bring it. You don't take pleasure in burnt offerings. But the sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, and a broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise. All through the Bible, you will find this phrase in one form or another. God will oppose the proud, but he will give grace to the humble. God will oppose the proud, but he will give grace to the humble. And in spite of what David had done, a broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise. And what you can't forget, God will choose not to remember. And God forgives not because we're good enough, but because he's good enough. And God will say, let's walk into a new future together. Listen, David can't go back to square one. I'm sure he'd love to. I'm sure he'd love to go back to standing there on his balcony, looking out, seeing Bathsheba. And when he said, hey, why don't you go bring her to me? When that servant said, don't you know that's somebody's wife? I'm sure David would love to, you know, just hit rewind and go back to that moment. He can't. The past can't be undone. It can be redeemed. It can be changed. It can be covered. And though your sins be as scarlet, they can be white as snow. There's a story of a father and his daughter, and they were out walking in the prairie in Canada. And he sees something in the distance, and it's quite alarming. It's a prairie fire. It's coming in their direction. He knows they can't outrun it. He did something really wise and really smart. He intentionally set fire to the grass around him, and he burned a large patch. And as the prairie fire was bearing down on them, this father took his little girl, and they got right in the center of that burned patch of grass. She was alarmed. She was terrified, and he reassured her. He says, "We're going to be okay. We're standing where the fire has already been." Now, that's actually the good news of the gospel right there. God forgave David on the same basis that he forgives you and me. We stand where the fire has already been. My sins have already been judged in Jesus Christ. He paid a debt he didn't owe. I owe a debt that couldn't be paid. But he actually paid for my sins. And the truth of the gospel is that God's wrath has actually already come down. And when I turn to Christ, my sins can be covered by grace. Listen, God's forgiveness involves grace. It's grace. I'm not good enough to buy it. I don't deserve it. I can't earn it. And I certainly can't demand it. God, you should do this for me. I agree with David. God, if you were to send me away forever, you'd be perfectly justified in doing so. It's a free gift. It costs Christ. It's a free gift to me. And so what is it in your life? There's something. You look in the mirror, and there's something there that you would like to forget. And you wonder, can God forgive it? God says to you, on the basis of the cross, what you cannot forget, I choose not to remember. And what you're not good enough to receive, I'm good enough to give to you. By grace, we are saved through faith. Not of works, so that none of us can boast. Three powerful prayers. I hope you'll pray them afresh this morning. God, cleanse me. God, restore me. And God, use me. Let your grace to me be strong and powerful. Allow me then to become a benefactor and a player as your grace energizes my life. Satan's going to whisper to you, hang up your uniform. Retire those cleats. Don't even show up for the second half. But you show up. And you play to win. I want to close and put some words up here on the screen. It's from a song somebody pointed me to several years ago called "Who Am I?" by a group called Point of Grace. I don't really know a lot of their songs. Sorry. I do know this one. Who am I? Who am I? That you would love me so gently. Who am I that you would recognize my name? Who am I that you would speak to me so softly? Conversation with the Lord Most High. Who am I? Oh, amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, now I'm found, was blind, but now I see. And the more I sing that sweet old song, the more I understand that I do not comprehend this love that's coming from your hand. Who am I? That you would love me so gently. Who am I that you would recognize my name? Who am I? That you would speak to me so softly. Conversation with the Lord Most High. Who am I? Grace, grace. God's grace. Grace that will pardon and cleanse within. Grace, grace. God's great grace. Grace that is greater than all my sin. Superabundant. Incomprehensible. Amazing grace. I hope you will move forward into God's future. At this time, we're going to walk into a time of prayer. Now, I'm going to ask our elder couples, please be quickly taking your places down here, and I'm going to ask the rest of you to be looking in your order of worship. You'll have a communication card there. Please fill out that card, and there are some blanks, and if you would like to check the appropriate blank, which would mean you'd want to talk to somebody about baptism, talk to somebody about identifying with our church, anything at all that we can help you in your walk with God, we would be happy to do that. As we come into a time of prayer, you're going to be invited to come down here and pray with one of our elder couples, or you can certainly pray right where you are, or gather with 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 others and pray there as well. But maybe today, all of us want to pray in a fresh way. God, cleanse me, restore me, use me. All right, let's stand together. Let's come before the Lord, please. And you are invited to come down here and pray as well.